This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
It's Agribusiness Today, Sports Radio 92.3 and 1450. Hopping on the phone today to talk about the markets. Visit with Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. Matt, thanks for taking the time. Busy time of year for a marketer and a farmer. You're that all wrapped up into one. You're all over the place today, so we appreciate the opportunity to chat.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad to be on with you to talk a little bit about what's going on this harvest and a little bit about the report, I assume.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's more important, harvest or report. We won't say that the first question out of the gate is the most important one because somebody's probably got that most important thing on their mind, and it might not be what we would think is top of mind for us. But you mentioned the report there. That is what everybody was certainly checking out yesterday, still thinking about today. What did those USDA and NAS numbers tell you midweek?
Yeah, I mean, so I think whenever you first glance at the report, you see the initial reaction. No question that the bean report was thought of to be quite friendly. And so, you know, essentially last month we had a 200 million bushel carryout. And then you had quarterly stocks pump a bunch of stocks into the ending stocks from last year, which, of course, is going to play into this year's balance sheet, into the carry-in. And so the assumption is that you would see stocks move higher, especially with the average trade guess, you know, that beans be pretty similar to a month ago's yield. And a lot of folks thought that bean yields might even be higher. And so, you know, the 200 million bushel carryout was actually a bit of a surprise, a bullish surprise. Saw the market race higher, gave back some of the gains, you know, but obviously we closed pretty strong there, you know, on Wednesday. The corn report. 1.172 was what the carryout was, which the estimation, you know, the average trade guess was like 1.12. So around 50 million bushels larger. So versus expectations, you know, it's pretty safe to say that, you know, the trade was looking at this as a, you know, a negative report. But good Lord, Steve, a 1.172 is still extremely tight. So, I mean, overall, whenever I'm looking at corn and beans on this report, it's pretty tough for me to say that we've got anything but a supportive situation. Man.
Do these numbers lead you anywhere, Matt? You know, I know the old adage is, you know, small crops get smaller, big crops get bigger. The crop isn't necessarily really small and getting smaller. It's not really big this year and getting bigger. Do you have anything you rely on when you start to think about what continues to happen with these updates and reports over the next couple of months?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, typically, a couple months in a row of reduction in yield is basically getting the ball rolling to continue to see reductions in yield, as you just suggested. But is that going to be the case this year? It's pretty tough to tell. The thing is that we all know the trend that we've seen is that the West had a poor crop, you know, and the East has had a pretty good crop. Now, I'm not going to say it's bumper crop everywhere, but I think a lot of folks that expected they were going to have a big crop that maybe had a little more dryness this summer than what they assumed, especially in a state like Illinois or Indiana or Ohio, where, you know, they finally had some good rain in August. I think what they found is that the dry weather didn't hurt them as bad as what they thought it might. So, you know, I could see yields maybe coming up a little bit, which would be contrary to what we typically see. I think the USDA at a 171.9 on corn probably has this thing dialed in fairly close. I think on a percentage basis, I can see more fluctuations as far as soybeans are concerned, maybe than corn, but that remains to be seen. But I think moving forward, the producer has to understand that, you know, for you to be able to continue to stay bullish at $7 and above, you need a real steady dose of bullish information. And right now, you know, I'm not sure that I see that, especially when I'm looking at the global macro situation, Southern Hemisphere. There's a lot of different reasons why a person doesn't want to get wildly bullish at these price levels.
Yeah, what's that window on being bullish then? I mean, you talk about what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere. Sure looks like Brazil's just going to keep planting boatloads of hectares, acres down there. I mean, how long do you want to be optimistic before you start wondering about what's coming around that corner?
That's the thing. That's a million-dollar question. And so, you know, there's no doubt the producers typically are just bullish, you know. I mean, most farmers, seems like it doesn't matter whether prices are high or low. Typically, you're bullish and you're waiting for better prices. But the problem with that logic is that we've already seen a really good really good, strong rally. So, you know, I think you could overstay your welcome anywhere in here. You know, when you're harvesting corn that's this close to $7 out of the field, as far as the board is concerned, and we all know that some of these basis levels have been pretty good here at the start of the year. But whenever you're harvesting, corn at that price level, boy, I struggle to want to stay bullish. Now, we have to be really cautious with a lot of the global macro situations that we have occurring. You know, inflation again over 8% this morning. No doubt about it that the stock market didn't like that. You know, initially we saw the stocks drop 900 points. This was before the close of the overnight session, and we saw corn and beans both plummet at the time. Now, we've recovered from there, but you got to understand that this global macro situation could take what is otherwise a super friendly fundamental situation on corn and actually cause the corn market to struggle to rally. So, you know, I think we should note the corn market has not been excited about staying above $7 for quite some time in here. And I'm not sure that that's a feature that's going to go away anytime soon.
It's been a long time, I think, since I've asked you about outside money, kind of that fund money in play here in commodity markets. Matt, and as you were talking about this inflation number, and we know about the strength, relative strength of the dollar here, what's your perspective on an inflationary environment in which we're in, and outside dollars fund money? Does it impact flow in and out of commodity markets? Is that its own thing, or are they so wrapped up with what's going on in Wall Street right now and other things that it's not going to trickle over to farm commodities?
That's a really good question. If you can't get interest rates or you can't get inflation under control with interest rate hikes, there's no doubt whenever you see a flow out of the equities markets, a lot of times the feature is that you see a flight to safety. Now, a flight to safety typically is going to be something, you know, you can get your hands on, maybe commodities. Obviously, you could go into just straight out, bank type stuff, whether it's bonds. You know, there's things you can do to kind of flight to safety. But one thing that's always been somewhat fashionable on that flight out of equities is going into commodities. Now, the thing is that, ag commodities might not be exactly what a person wants to go into, especially with higher interest rates, because we all know higher interest rates typically have been kind of hard on the agricultural sector. So it'd be very interesting to see how that money flow moves moving forward. And then the other thing you got to ask yourself is money flow into commodities. You know, do the funds want to buy into the fact that we're going to see their investment really grow with a long play whenever corn's already pushing $7? And I think right now, unless they're seeing something that I don't see, it's pretty tough for me to think that we're going to be wildly higher from here. And so I don't know how excited funds are going to be to step in that situation.
Talking to Matt Bennett today, agmarket.net. Matt back on the road here, returning from the College Road Show. See him this weekend, U.S. Farm Report. I'm sure he had a good time at the U of I. We'll ask for a little update, maybe a sneak preview of what he talked about there. We've got to talk basis here, Matt, so let's do that right now. You were talking about West versus East. I was thinking of the connection between the Big Ten West and the Big Ten East. There's some haves and have-nots split there a little bit. What does it look like basis-wise?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you what, Steve, it's really interesting. With us being able to do business with guys across the Corn Belt and gals across the Corn Belt, you know, in that Garden City, like, liberal Kansas area, of course, there's a ton of cattle in the western Kansas, Nebraska, down into the Panhandle of Texas. But I've got a couple of growers right in that area, and they're looking at harvesting corn right now and selling corn into their elevator or livestock feed yard at $2 plus over the board. And so they're selling $9 corn, in essence, right out of the field. You know, and so essentially what's going on is that, you know, some of those outfits in that situation, whether it's a feed yard typically or an ethanol plant, knows that given the weather, that they simply don't have the bushels available to meet their needs. So what are they doing? Well, they're pumping the basis to a level that is drawing corn from areas they typically don't draw corn from. And so, yeah, $2 over basis. Obviously, a lot of folks in our part of the world would kind of salivate at something like that. But you've got to understand that, you know, you're talking a lot about a lot of producers that you know, under irrigation, you typically see 2.25 to 250 corn, you know, that are struggling to get to 175 this year because of just the harsh conditions. And so it's going to be very interesting, that migration, as you move through the calendar year. Now, I've got, or the marketing year, I've got to think that some of the better basis levels are going to be early as some of these originators try to lock up needs. And if you really want to get a better basis level, you know, than what you see early on, you're probably going to have to be quite patient, you know, as you move forward.
You mentioned feedlots, ethanol production in there too. I haven't come across, I don't think, this week's ethanol production number, but the last number of weeks, Matt, I've been reading one under 1 million barrels a day. I figure some of that's plant maintenance. Some of that might be tough time getting corn if you're out west, right? You're in a competition market and there's just not a lot there. Should you be overall concerned if you're a producer right now about the grind that's going into ethanol and how we're hovering under that 1 million barrel a day mark?
Yeah, I mean, it is a concern, no question about it. At the same time, this time of year, especially this year, regionally speaking, I don't think a lot of folks were able to get their hands on corn at a price level that would allow them to have the margins that they needed to operate their plant. As more and more harvest gets to going throughout the Corn Belt, it sure seems like you're seeing better numbers every week. So, you know, you got to, again, try to analyze, well, what's going to happen as you get farther along down the line. I've got to think a lot of these originators stepped out and tried to book a fair amount of needs several months out. Typically, your ethanol industry is very good at locking margins in for sometimes up to 6 months. So if that's the case, my personal thought is that you'll see those numbers continue to improve as we move forward. Now, I was just, again, on U.S. Farm Report. I know Scott Irwin there from the University of Illinois, a very brilliant guy. He expects to see corn usage for ethanol down up to even 100 million bushels from the USDA's number yesterday. And so, you know, yesterday they dropped another 50 million bushel. Are they going to take another 100 out of that by the end of the marking year? It only remains to be seen. But certainly whenever you look at the lack of profit margins we've seen over the last month or two, it's not all that far-fetched to think that we would continue to see a bit of a slowdown in that industry.
Matt Bennett's on the phone with us with AgMarket.net. Matt, how's your personal harvest going? Dad waiting on you right now in the harvester?
Yeah. Basically, we had a couple of days of rain. Nothing major. In fact, 4 to 5 tenths, so almost a half inch for most of our farms. But I think you know as well as I do, Steve, we've had such a good run. This harvest has been just fantastic harvest weather. And I got to think most producers, whether they want to admit it or not, needed a day or two to kind of recuperate, get some repairs done, maybe get a little more rest than what they've been getting. And I think a lot of producers in that central Illinois area that we're talking to right now are fairly far along. Now, I know very few people that are done. I only know of a couple. But for the most part, I think the next 2 weeks, you're going to see a lot of folks be able to get done. So I'm kind of hoping this little respite gave everyone the opportunity to get rested up for this final push.
What do you think of the Illinois football team this year? It's almost a reason to think you need a rain on a Saturday so you can sit around and watch TV.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Steve, one of my favorite things to do in the harvest, you know, is to listen to the football game on Saturdays. But the last few years, it's been kind of rough to do. This year, we're 5-1. I mean, heck of a team. And I would say this, Coach Palema has done such a good job, you know, restoring, I think, a faith for a lot of fans. You know, you had almost 50,000 people there last week, biggest crowd we've seen in a long time. I sure hope that for homecoming this weekend, we see a big crowd show up, you know, because if they turn around and beat Minnesota, then they've got a really decent chance to win the Big Ten West. And, you know, if you would have said that 6 weeks ago, Steve, on your show, you'd had people calling in saying you're crazy. But that opportunity is there this year. And so, it sure is nice to see this Illinois team making some strides.
Yeah, they're playing great. If you're in the combine near us, it's 96.7 Bob FM and 1450 AM, 92.3 FM to hear Brian Barnhart on that call. If not, if you're in Matt's area, you got your other radio stations to dial in on. But I know a lot of people, Matt, are doing just that, listening in the grain cart, listening in the combine, listening wherever they are on the radio because they're busy this time of year. And Brian and everybody else keeps them up to date. So we're glad you're tuning in.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed it. And you know, again, like I said, it's just a little more enjoyable this year.
It is. And it's better too, by the way, Matt, than listening to harvest during basketball season, right? Like you're doing something better if you're finished when it's football and not basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. I think Illinois's got a good team on the chance for basketball as well this year, though. So it's going to be a totally different look. But, you know, I'm a huge Illinois basketball fan, and I've got to say the athleticism on this team may be the best we've seen in a long time.
He's Matt Bennett, agmarket.net, our guest here on today's noon program. Thank you for your time, Matt.
Absolutely, bud. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.